Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Conversations with Cynthia Hyatt, professional psychotherapist and relationship expert. In private practice for over 20 years, Cynthia specializes in teaching individuals, groups, and organizations about how to be successful in relationships, how to handle the variety of differences each gender brings, and ultimately, how to be your own best version. With a dynamic and enthusiastic approach, Cynthia helps each person understand how temperament and gender affects every relationship and inspires her audiences to become all God created them to be. With this understanding, she shares practical tools, resources, and wisdom to guide each person to a transformational understanding of themselves and others. You can find Cynthia on the web at CynthiaHyatt.com and on social media under Cynthia Hyatt Inc. for current events, updates, and inspiration during your week. And now, here's Cynthia.
Well, thank you for joining me today. I'm always glad when you are listening in. And I have a very special guest today, my friend Rob Ekno, all the way from Los Angeles. And he does this great show out in Los Angeles called The God Show. So I've been on his show a couple of times, and I have him frequently on mine because he just has a great way of looking at life and a great way of just attacking life in such an enthusiastic way. So he has so many phenomenal stories that I like to hear about what God does in his life and where he's at. And I wanted him to come on to this show today and talk about the 12-step phenomenon because it really is a phenomenon. It's a phenomenal program, and I think sometimes it gets mischaracterized in the Christian world. And so I really want to talk about how powerful it is, how just healing it is, and the recovery that comes from it, and how very, very simple it is. And wouldn't that be just like God? So, Rob, thank you so much for joining me. I'm very glad you're here in studio today. So just say hi to the listeners and tell us a little bit about what you're doing.
Well, I am so excited to be here. Always good when we can talk about God and the 12 steps because it's definitely saved my life and, you know, thousands of other people I know. And, you know, I was homeless 25 years ago, and today, you know, things are not as in the same place that I would want them to be, but it's so funny how God just continues to put me in a place by place by place. I think we had talked a little while back, and you had mentioned that maybe He was using me as a disciple because he just keeps sending me different places.
Exactly.
And just like the birds and the sparrows, I get cared for. So all I have to do is focus on God and work my 12-step program, and everything else in life always works out.
I love it. Well, because there are some listeners today that haven't heard your story. So could you give us like a little short synopsis all the way back from, you know, when you were kind of at the height of your career, how you kind of bottomed out, which is, you know, one of those things about God that we always go to God as our last, you know, ditch effort. And I'm so glad that he is not easily offended, that he knows he's many times the last choice. So I love hearing the story because you really, it really is a phenomenal story. So take us back to where you were at the height of your career.
All right, so the height of my career, I was back in New England where I grew up, and I was the top-rated on-air personality on a top 40 station. Then I ended up being the host and executive producer of a nightly syndicated sports show that went across America. And I used to cover, you know, the Boston Garden with all the old Celtics and Red Sox and Bruins and all that kind of stuff. And I did PR for a couple of pro sports teams. And then I learned to snort cocaine really well and drink a lot of alcohol. And the next thing you know, my house was gone and I was showering in the Greyhound bus station down in Fort Lauderdale.
Wow. That's huge. So how did you get the wake up? Like, you know, this is kind of like the prodigal son where, you know, he comes to his senses. So how did that process happen for you?
I it's so interesting. I actually got into an argument with an old girlfriend that did on Thanksgiving in 1992 and didn't want to hang out with her because I didn't want to spend $35 going to her class reunion. And I ended up at a bar and spent $80 at the bar. And then about 20 minutes after I left the bar, I was about 200 yards from the police station and lights and sirens pulled me over. And I got out of there about 4 a.m, and I was so just done. And I just looked at her when she came to pick me up, and I just said, I am done.
Wow. You've not told me that. You didn't tell me that piece.
Well, here's the disease of whatever you have, whether it's gambling, alcoholism, sex, whatever it is. You know, the disease is always trying to make you win the game in a stupid way. So I got my breathalyzer results from the state like about 2 weeks later, and you know, my name is only four letters, E-K-N-O, and they spelt my name wrong. They spelt it E-N-K-O when they gave me my analysis back. And so, of course, right off the bat, my alcoholic mind said, oh, my gosh, I can play Perry Mason. And I'm not Robert Enco, I'm Robert Ekno.
Right.
And, you know, I was going to go to court and I was going to build up this police officer and let him tell me all the great training he had and years of training and expertise and how they calibrate the machines, so all this stuff. And I was going to say, with all that training and everything you have, you can't read four letters off of a license.
Wow.
How do we know that? How do we know that you calibrated that machine correctly if you can't even? And all of a sudden, thank God, God came down from heaven and smacked me on the side of the head and said, "Listen, you know you're guilty. You know you're done. Let's end it now and let's move on and let me guide your life." And that's where it started.
Wow, that's amazing. That's amazing how God does it, how God intervenes.
Oh, man, and it's so funny because I was walking with a friend yesterday who hasn't seen her dad in many years, and her dad wore gold and black all the time. And yesterday we were walking in a park in Hollywood area, and a butterfly, gold and black butterfly, whipped right in front of her, and then it whipped in front of her again, and she jumped back, and I said, oh, my God, that's your father.
Wow.
Letting you know that all is well. And I was just doing this show with you and like 2 seconds ago, and I told her, my brother comes in the form of a yellow butterfly. He's the one that saved my life, but he ended up losing his later on, and he just flew by me as we were just doing this show.
Wow. Coincidences are actually not really coincidences.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, that's what I told you. My next book I'm writing is called It's God, Not Coincidence. I mean, if you looked at all the amazing things that have happened in my life with, like, nothing over the last couple of years except God and the people he puts in my life, I mean, it's incredible. Without God, the story that I would write over the last 2 years would be humanly impossible.
Exactly. Well, you know, so just so the listeners know, I had you on my other show, which is the local show here in Phoenix. It's Faith Talk Radio 1360 KPXQ, and you and I spent 2 hours. I had you on 1 week, and then I had you a second week to actually finish up the 12 steps because it is such a deep and broad, expansive topic. I mean, even though it's very simple, we can really go deep with it. So we're not going to have time, obviously, today to do all the 12 steps, but I wanted to encourage the listeners to understand that the 12-step phenomenal is such a spiritual program. It is not a religious activity, and that's therein lies a lot of the success. And so there is some great Christian, what we would call maybe versions of it, which is called Celebrate Recovery, and they are all over the valley here in Phoenix, and they are all over the nation, actually worldwide. So we have maybe 20 minutes to talk about the 12 steps and what they're really like. And so you did such a great job on the other shows just really delineating those steps, and you really focused, though, for you on that 11th step. So if you could just kind of talk a little bit about the first 10 very briefly, but then let's really focus on the 11th, because I liked how you were explaining the 11th step and how that transcends through your whole entire life.
Well, yeah, and you know, the thing is that in the very first version of the 12-step book that they wrote, they, you know, it starts off in the fifth chapter, which has all the steps in it on how it works. It starts off, rarely have we seen a person fail who has thoroughly followed our path. And they actually, the original version actually said, never have we seen a person
right.
fail. And they just didn't want to scare people away, you know, and they wanted
right.
people to at least come in and give it a shot and see what happens. And you know, nobody, I've never seen anybody in 22 plus years and all the thousands upon thousands of people that I've heard shared their stories ever fail. And the only people who ever fail are the ones who come in and they say, you know what, I stopped doing this, I stopped doing that, I stopped doing this. Because this is a design for living. It's not about, you know, somebody being a bad person or something like that, or whatever. It's about God gave these two gentlemen way back in 1935 the idea to help millions of us. And so the first step is the biggest one, you know, admitting that we're powerless over whatever it is that you're addicted to, you know, drugs, alcohol, right. sex, whatever it might be, gambling, and that your life's unmanageable. If you can't admit that, and here's the funny thing, Cynthia, even if I don't admit that I'm an alcoholic, the fact that I'm living on the street, the fact that I can't stop drinking, the fact that I can't stop drugging whenever I do this, just because I don't admit it doesn't mean that I'm not actually an alcoholic.
Exactly.
However, or any other addiction, and I'm just going to use alcohol as the example, but it could be any other addiction. But the reality is that the only way I'm ever going to get help is to man up and step up to the plate and admit it. And by admitting it, then I get a chance to save my life and go to God and allow Him to work in my life. And then I get to have a life that is just amazing. And even when things aren't so good, they still work out.
Exactly. And see, and I think what you had a very good point about, you know, being willing to man up and really apply this. And I think what I really want you listeners to hear is that, you know, we can talk about what we call as substance addictions or you know, very overt addictions. That means it's a tangible thing. It's either a process addiction like behaviors, and that would be compulsive gambling or shopping or overeating, whatever that is. And it can also be the very regular addictions that we call, and that would be to a substance of some kind. So we can also apply this, though, to just our spiritual life when it comes to, am I, quote-unquote, addicted to anger? It doesn't mean there's truly a chemical response per se, but there is a neural net in my brain that continues. It just is habitual. It feels very naturally to me, very normal to me, and I prefer going there. And I'm having a really hard time controlling it. So I want you listeners to think about what is an area of your life that is a habitual problem. It's that in the sin that so easily besets you, and why the 12-step program can really work for just as a lifestyle philosophy. I mean, wouldn't you say that's true, Rob?
Oh, 100%. I have people ask me all the time that technically wouldn't be considered, you know, addicts of any different thing, like you said, shopping, whatever it is. And they say, how come you always seem to be so happy and you get through everything? I say, go to the library and ask the librarian for this thing called the Big Book. And
right.
It's the most checked anywhere. And I said, it's not for addicts and alcoholics. It's a design for living. And you hit it on
exactly.
the head. It's a spiritual design for living that can help any human being that puts these 12 steps and does the process and continues to do them on a daily basis, they'll have a much better life. And it costs them absolutely nothing but a little time and a little trust in God.
Exactly. So the first one you were talking about is that admitting that we're powerless over whatever that is. So I'm powerless over, like for myself, I always am joking with people about, I just move too fast. I'm a very fast-paced person. I'm a fast thinker, fast talker. Well, that also translates into the fact that I do like to speed. And so I'm constantly working with God about speeding. And so I can even say, as little as that may seem to people, maybe it doesn't seem as destructive as a substance. It can be, certainly, if I get in a wreck. But it's one of these things that I can get into my car every day and say, God, I am powerless over this because I want to do it. And I start doing it before I even can catch myself. And so, God, I need you to help me with this place in my life that appears, that feels unmanageable to me, that I don't feel like I have the power over it that I would like to have.
Yeah, absolutely. And so as long as, you know, and so then the second step is that we came to believe a power greater than ourselves could restore us to sanity. Like you said, making intelligent choices and stuff.
Right.
And in order
exactly.
to be restored to something, I had to have been something. So at one time in my life, God made it possible for me to think on my own, and I used
right.
my free will that He gave me to think about doing stupid things rather than think about doing godly things. So I paid the price. And then, you know, I make a decision to turn my life and my will over to the God as I understand Him. And a lot of people, unfortunately, that's a tough one for them because they think God is a punishing God and they're fearful of him. And why would I be in this position if God, you know, loved me so much? Well, he loved you so much. He allowed you to run your own life, as you said,
exactly.
You know, he waited for us. And I chose to make horrible choices. It wasn't God that made these horrible choices. It's like you, if you get stopped speeding or you unfortunately even ran into a tragic situation and hit somebody in a crosswalk or, you know, that wouldn't be God that did that to you.
Exactly.
It'd be because you chose to, with your own free will, put your foot on the gas pedal faster than you knew you should have been doing it.
Well, see, and that's why it's such an important, that's why I like this distinction because, you know, speeding can sound like a very small thing, and for the most part it really is. I mean, I haven't ever gotten in a car wreck, but the reality is it is not a logical, sane thing to do. The healthy thing to do is obey the law. That's the healthy thing to do. That's the sane thing to do. And so as small as this issue of self-control over just speeding or wanting to rush through or wanting, you know, to get someplace sooner than what maybe I really can, it can be as small as that. It can be as big as, you know, an addiction to alcohol, like your brother, you know, who really had some recovery over it and then lost that recovery and ended up succumbing to it. And the tragedy of that.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, he got away from doing the stuff that he knew he needed to do. And, you know, he allowed other things to get in his way of God. And I've learned that a long time ago. If I put anything in between me and God, except for my sobriety, then everything else falls pieces. And if I don't put anything between me and God, then it all works out. It may not work out exactly the way I wanted it to, but it works out a whole heck of a lot better than it would have had I tried to just do it on my own.
Right. Now, I kind of got you off track because you were talking about this very important point of, you know, God as we understand him. And I don't want people that are maybe feeling nervous to think that, oh, we're going to let you have any kind of God you want. What we're really saying is, if I really seek after God, I will find him. He promises that. He says, if you seek me, you will find me. So what we're wanting people to do is seek after God. And what's going to happen is they will experience him in a way that makes sense to them.
Well, yeah, it's absolutely, and you're correct. You know, I spent the last few days with an amazing friend of mine who I hadn't seen in years, and we just did some walking and hiking and different things, and all of a sudden, at the end of the day yesterday, she's like, wow, you know, she started to see things in a different light, and especially when that butterfly flew in front of her, and it was gold and black, and I said, wait a minute, what colors did your father always wear? He always used to wear gold neck chains and black clothes. I said, that was your dad in the colors that he was telling you life is okay, and he's watching you from above, and you know, and God is sending us messages all the time. The question is, do I see them and throw them away, or do I see them and take action on them, or am I so selfish and self-centered and I got to do this, got to do that I don't see anything and I just keep making things worse?
Right, exactly. So
you know,
if we move, go ahead.
So the fourth step, you know, I know you want to get on the 11th, and we don't have much time. So the fourth step, we just write down on a piece of paper all the stuff we've done. And so many people have a hard time with that because, you know, they don't want to look at themselves. So the bottom line is, I've already done the stuff I've done. I can't correct it now. It's done. God already knows what I've done. So all he says is write this stuff down on a piece of paper. Then in the fifth step, just tell one other human being, so you humble yourself before me, and you will have this amazing peace. And we could do a whole show just on that for me. And then, you know, we have defects. Like you said, one of yours is speeding. You know, you ask God to remove these defects. But you know what? The thing is, he removes them when they get in the usefulness of us doing his work. He may need you to still focus on the fact that you speed because it keeps you focused on other things. Not necessarily going fast down the freeway, but it keeps you centered on him and you're constantly going,
exactly.
God. And if you didn't speed anymore, then maybe you wouldn't need God and you wouldn't come to him so much, you know?
True. And
especially an alcoholic like myself, if he took away all my defects of character and I all of a sudden think, now, oh, my God, I'm a perfect person. I'm not impatient
anymore. Then you have
angry anymore.
You have a new defect of pride.
Right? Exactly. But also, then I stop being of service. Why do I have to help this person? Why do I have to go to these meetings?
Exactly.
Why do I have to? And and now I'm right back where I was. So it's amazing if you really focus on God, as you know, he just keeps doing this amazing stuff in your life. And it just it almost freaks people out when I tell them all the stories. You understand. And I told Saturday I was in the Los Angeles area, and I told two true believers in Christ. They had just come from a Bible story, and I told them some of the stories that had happened. It's like, oh, man. And they start crying. It's funny. When you tell people that truly are hooked on God and believe in him, they start crying, and they really get these feelings that, wow, you know, God really is real. And,
right.
You know, I think he gives me these stories to tell because he knows I'm a crazy bald guy that's willing to tell these stories, not when I'm at the top of my game, but as I'm going through the game, and the game is, you know, a bit of a struggle, but I'm still willing to share that the struggle is okay because God's got me covered.
Right.
So,
well, see,
you know,
I'm thinking to myself, we have only 8 minutes to go. So what if I have you on next week again? Then we can really focus on the 11th step. We can kind of like finish the rest of the 12, but we can really focus on maybe next week, if you'd be so willing to be on my show next
Absolutely.
Week.
Absolutely.
Awesome. Then we can really focus on that, because I don't want to rush through how powerful it is to come through the 12 steps, get to, you know, go through the first 10, get to the 11th, and that's how you live. So, anyways, okay, so we're ready. We humbly ask him to remove our shortcomings. That's number 7. And then I think you were at number 8. Is that right? Made a list of all the blessings?
Yeah, now we make a list of the people that we've harmed, and we become willing to make amends to them all. Now, the thing about this is when we get into step 9, now we're going to make direct amends to such people wherever possible, except if we're going to injure them. And that doesn't mean physically. That could mean emotionally. You know, if you cheated, if you slept with some guy's wife, it's probably not the best idea to go up to that husband and say, by the way, dude, you know, I was, you know, with your wife a couple of years ago.
Right, and I need to apologize.
That's not a good one.
Yeah. No.
And
no.
So so we suggest whatever program you're working that you talk to somebody else first before you make those such choices. Because what happens is, whether it be shopping or gambling or whatever, people all of a sudden, they start finding a new way of life. Now all of a sudden they go, oh, I want to go say sorry to this person. I want to go say sorry to that person. I'm going to become a counselor and I'm going to save the world. And it's like, all right, how about you learn how to do this a little bit yourself first?
Right,
you know,
exactly.
It's nice that you haven't spent $20,000 at the mall in the last 3 months, but how about you try it for a year or so, or 2 years, or,
right.
You know, kind of get into a new life. And my friend who I was with this weekend, you know, she was saying, you know, she's seeing different things and feeling different things because I had offered her some different ways of looking at life in a more godly way, and she's started recognizing them quickly. And it was interesting to see the transformation that she was starting to have. And I told her, she said, well, I'm definitely not as godly as you. And I said, trust me, it took me years to get this way. It did not happen
exactly
overnight. I went through tragedy after tribulation after this. And each time I just kept tweaking myself towards God a little bit more, a little bit more. And now it's like, even where I'm at now, which is not at the top of the game, it's so funny because I talk to people and they go, it's amazing because your story is so powerful because you're willing to talk about it through the trials and tribulations, where most people only want to talk about God or whatever once they hit the success, sign the big deal, whatever it might be. And then they go,
well,
look at me, aren't I great?
Isn't,
you know,
that crazy? Because, you know, we have Philippians 1:6 that tells us, he who began a good work in you will complete it until the day of Christ Jesus. So the work goes all the way until we die. So if we're waiting until we're done and we've arrived, we're only going to be talking about it in heaven. Because we're always working on something. And if we're not working on something, that is a problem as well.
Absolutely. So that's what I was telling my friend this weekend. I was like, you know, don't try to compare yourself to me. You were living life, you know, in one direction, and I just, God asked me to just share some thoughts with you. You can use them or you cannot use them. And it's funny because she applied a few of them, and all of a sudden she started getting smiles in her eyes, and then she would get tears in her eyes, and they were tears of, wow, I am worth, you know, I am a special child of God. And, you know, he does have a special plan for me. And it was just enough, you know, for her to see. And it gave her a whole new light on life.
Talk about that a little bit more, because I think that's one of the most powerful things. When we are looking at ourselves and we're feeling despair or despondency or shame or guilt or whatever that is, to really be able to understand that we still, in spite of ourselves, are always a child of God and always wanted and loved by Him.
Yeah, I think, you know, this particular friend had been through, as a lot of people have, abusive relationships and stuff. And, you know, I just shared with her, I said, listen, you're a child of God. He didn't put you here to be abused and neglected and, you know, treated and spoken to badly and so on and so forth. And I said, you know, from here on out, God is just letting me know that He wants you to know that it's no longer acceptable. And, you know, He's there for you. And then we took a walk around the park. And her dad, who was, you know, her and her dad were, you know, very, very close. And she misses him dearly and hasn't seen him in about 15 years. All of us, I mean, he flew by her nose, you know, and she jumped back. And then he flew around again. And I said, wait a minute, your dad, the picture you showed me, your dad had gold chains around his neck and gold watches and black clothes. And that butterfly was gold and black. I said, see, God is letting you know that if you focus on Him, that everything is going to be okay, and your dad loves you dearly, and all of this stuff. And you could see this transformation starting to take place in her, like she's realizing, wow, I am an amazingly special human being. God did create, and, you know, not with pride and ego, but, you know, unlike others had been telling her before.
Well, that's like, you know, the truth will set us free. And it's really understanding that one of the reasons that God wants to heal us from all this compulsive behavior, all this striving, all perfectionism and all these substances and, you know, all these different behaviors is because it really gets in the way of us being able to feel how much God loves us. It gets in the way of us being able to know how much God loves us.
Yeah, absolutely. And I got to tell you, when you know that He is on your side, if for whatever reason you don't know now. Again, it's just the little things. It's just, oh, wait a minute, that was kind of cool. Well, you know, you might consider it a coincidence the first time or the second time or the third time. And all of a sudden, if I told you the whole story, which you know most of it, if not all of it, you know all these amazing miracles that have happened to me that just do not make sense in a man's world. If I went to Harvard and Yale and got scientists to put this on paper and they did all their, you know, documents and they, nope, that doesn't add up. It can't humanly be possible. I said, well, that's why, obviously, it's God that's doing this.
Exactly. Exactly. So
you know, it's amazing.
So we're to make direct amends to such people whenever possible, except when we do harm, and then continue. Number 10 is continue to take a personal inventory. When we are wrong,
correct,
and promptly admit it.
Yeah, on a daily basis, again, our chance to man up on a daily basis, if we've mistreated somebody, if we've done something wrong, whatever it may be, you know, we turn around, and then we also look at our day, and even if we didn't necessarily talk bad to somebody or harm somebody, did we do things that were selfish? Were we, you know, doing things that had a selfish motive to them, not a godly motive to them as well? So constantly checking our motives in life. Why am I doing certain things? Why am I hanging out with certain people? Why am I going certain places? What am I objective? Am I there to serve God in that place, or am I there because I'm looking to get that connection or whatever it might be?
Right. Well, I think that that's part of just, you know, in an ongoing, being repentant on an ongoing basis, you know, that constantly we are just repenting and just saying, God, I didn't handle that well, and I should have done this differently, so that we can really experience forgiveness and move on, so that we're not burdened with all of our imperfections that the enemy of our soul is constantly wanting to remind us of. So we have about 30 seconds. So, Rob, I'm really excited that you're here today, and I want you listeners to join next week, same time, and we are going to talk about this 11th step, which really talks about how we are going to carry out and walk out the will of God for our lives. So, Rob, thank you so much for being with us today, and listeners, I want you to have a great week, and I always am praying for you and praying blessings for you.
Absolutely. Thank you so much. We'll talk to you next week. Have a blessed day.
Thanks, Rob.